wanted to be respectful of everything that was being taken out. So I made this little styrofoam base, and I had some gold bracelets that I put on it. And then, so I actually had to tear out all these little thoughts and all these little gems that were hidden in it, including Linda's. And I'm so sorry Linda's not here, because I thought she did such a great job last week with what she had done. So the idea was to collect all those things, all the previous things that had gone before, and count them somehow so that, that this is history, and then purify the whole thing. And so I had to repair carefully all the places where the things had been torn out, with plaster, Paris, like, and then came through the whole thing with white gesso. And it was interesting because I had some real hard times with some of the things. That little cone shape on the top, there's a very strong image on the main merciless, White Gordon.
His collar.
He had a collar like that. And so, I mean, all these things kept coming up out of this. And, but the realization I had was, then I decided I wanted to spray the...
You're right.
I wanted to glue all those things in place, the things that would come out. And so I decided to get some Krylon paint or coating that would make them glossy and hopefully put them in place. And as I did it, if you'll notice, it melted the styrofoam. So that all of those things, not only did the object melt out of the structure, but the object melted into the base. And it was amazing. I mean, I saw this thing start to happen like a chemistry experience. You know? And but the real realization I had about the whole process was that it was an amulet before, and now it has a talismanic quality, and now somebody can make it into something more symbolic. The other thing that was very interesting is realizing, even this morning as I was putting another coat of paint on it, how much effort Loris had put into making all of those walled off sections inside, and just the effort and care that had gone into it. Make it, because it was hard even to paint it.
Yeah.
And because there were no flat surfaces, and so I had to keep painting over and over to make sure I covered over all the darkness. And it's very, very and then the top six sort of all back in there.
Let's turn it one more time. Dolores, how do you feel? Linda's not here, unfortunately.
This is a real eye-opener for me because I mean, what I'm writing a journal on my reactions to my sculpture that I worked on, that Chris had very strong reactions in me, and he seemed to have strong reactions in mine. And the whole idea, I was going to paint it white at first. It was like maybe a science fiction resembling communication. And I put the closed chopsticks there because I wanted someone to be able to move the ball, to be able to do something with it. And to do that, you would have to open the chopsticks. So, I mean, he did it. He painted it white, and he moved it. And all it is a symbol of communication. And you can't be afraid of it. And I mean, next week, I guess, when I worked on mine, I'll comment on my reaction. When I worked on Chris's, it was really a big challenge to me. And I'm very pleased with what he did with it. I mean, I don't think it's changed the idea at all. The idea is still there for me. You still have to know what to do with those balls and all the compartments.
This has been worked on 3 times, so it will remain with you, Chris. And the flower will remain with Sylvia, the poppy, because they've been worked on 3 times. Not for superstitious reasons, but for exacting reasons. Very well. I see Mr. Potato Head there. Or what seemed to be Mr. Potato Head. Can he go up on the dais? Is that a serape? No. Guy gets around.
Yeah.
This was originally started off this is the third time around. Last week it was brought back, and the yellow hair was added, and there was a cigarette in his mouth. Who would you say he looked like? Oscar Wilde?
Almost like Oscar Wilde, yeah, he did. Let's turn it once.
And when I got it, I was disappointed because the clay is very hard and you can't work with it. So I thought, well, what am I going to do here? And the only thing I did was take the cigarette out and add a flasher scarf and a band around the hat.
To match the scarf?
Yes.
Oscar would not have minded.
I don't think so. But I did. I just proved the body through smoking.
Yes.
Oh, I like the line profile now with the puffy scarf coming out.
The scarf adds to the profile, indeed. Yes. As any Edwardian dandy would have known.
A touch of class.
Ed, did you begin this?
Yeah.
How do you see?
Well, it's very, very changed each time. Completely changed. Now he's supercilious and mundane and we're fat-lipped. They go together, thank you.
Turn the fat lip from Ed, would you, towards Walter?
The lip was originally altered to accommodate the cigarette, I think. Now, sans cigarette is glaring.
His last line on his dying hospital bed was supposed to have been, "This wallpaper's killing me."
Oscar Wilde. Walter?
I had the feeling that he was a poet. When I began to work on him, I was going to make a hole in the mouth so I could stick the cigarette in and hold my mouth. And I happened to find that the material was hard to work on, so that there wasn't anything that I was able to do with the form itself. So I added the hair on and the hat and put the cigarette in the mouth.
Is the hair the same? It seems like it's undergone
it's
a haircut.
A little fluffed up.
It's been
a buffy ride all.
Oh, it wasn't scissors, it was circumstance.
Right.
Oh, okay.
But it does look restyled.
It surely does.
He's still a poet. He's
a good case for it. Yeah, he'd probably get his check.
It's yours, Jerry. The next case is on the breadboard there, or the clay, if that could be brought forward.
This was originally Jerry's creation, and then Sylvia recreated the piece last week, and then I received it. I was very elated to receive it because aesthetically, I appreciate the form, and so I did not make a radical change. I could not destroy the rooster. And
was that not original with Jerry?
The
rooster?
Jerry,
isn't that interesting? Jerry, it survived all of the permutations.
So I thought, well, the rooster could be the male, and this is the Madonna, so the yin and the yang. I had a few, you know, features. And this one face here, I left it this way because I felt it kind of had a multifaceted personality indentation here on one side of the face. But overall, I just, not refined it necessarily, but just removed pieces of clay here and there. So it would not look as massive as this cancer.
That's right, it has been trimmed down.
Yes, well, yeah, basically what I did was just trimmed it, because, as I said, aesthetically, I could appreciate what I saw when I received it.
What was the model you had in mind, Henry Moore, Madonna?
Yeah. Well, you know, when Sylvia presented this for the past last week, that was the impression that I had gotten since, you know, we had highlighted more. Maybe you had gotten an idea from Moore's work, but maybe you had just through your own vision came upon, you know, the form.
This clay is able to be fired now, I believe. I think that this clay would take firing. I think. Jerry, any observations? I mean, it's interesting. It must be interesting for you the way that this is. It has retained a great deal of the impress that you originally gave to it, almost off the cuff, as it were.
Yeah, aesthetically, the feeling never changed that I wanted, you know, I was aiming for a very hard line that Sylvie picked right up on it and just kind of added to it. What she did was add another, I had a single feature and was a single human being, which was a kind of a man with a chicken head, and she added more people. She added a woman with child, and then if you look over here, we've got almost a jewel type person, the chicken on one side, and then it looks like a mother with a child in the arm again, so we developed a family here. But aesthetically, the original modern type feel that I had for it, the massive, never left out of it.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if it makes me even more interested. The craft, yeah. I'm wondering if it fell off the car seat.
I had it on the washer at home at my house here. And I was...
Unbalanced load.
You know what? No, the washing machine was not in operation. And I was so disappointed when I saw that crack. Because when I finished with it, everything was intact. So
it occurred mysteriously.
Yes. I was so disappointed in the crack.
Did it crack by itself?
Yes, it did.
So it just, if there's a fissure from drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So the form itself has contributed to the crack.
But you didn't make an effort.
I didn't contribute to it at all.
No, but the interesting part to me is you did not make an effort
to mend it.
To mend it. But it's sort of sitting there, and it looks like it could have been a conscious decision to sort of crack it and leave it there, it's funny now.
Turn it 180 degrees once so that, for instance, Jerry can see what I'm seeing.
Because it really sits there almost in a space. It's almost like there has to be a core holding the head on, like it's on a steel rod or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jerry, from your vantage now, draw an imaginary extension of the crack across. Where does it intersect the other figure?
I always think it would go right through the forehead area.
Yeah.
Above the eyebrows.
Yeah. John, if you draw an imaginary extension of the crack, where does it intercept the figure on this side? By the other figure.
Well, it's through the head, through the top of the head above the eye.
Yeah, same place. So if the crack actually works aesthetically, with a certain element of the meaning of the composition, which is freaky or not, depending on your view of coincidence. But nevertheless,
and we've all lost our heads once or twice.
We have all lost our heads, right? And the cracks usually appear at the vocal cord, right? The tongue is the hardest thing to guard. The beast in us are not the genitals, but the tongue, you know. Well, okay, now this is the third time, so this work belongs to you. Now, did you not work on another?
Yeah, I worked on
all right.
Not a procrastinator. But I have three pieces here today.
With this, Jerry has answered the question. The chicken did come first.
The chicken came first.
I was going to start off with the Hollywood image, and I wanted to turn the snake into a psychedelic color. And then I decided, well, I'm going to just between the original form and just remove the snake.
Could you take it around, show it so people can look on top of it while she talks? Thank you.
Have the snake leave the definite line and return to its natural habitat.
Oh, please continue. The snakes returning to their natural habitat. See, now how do you see it?
I was aware that she didn't put water in the fountain. I somehow thought that this might happen, especially when she mentioned to me that she might paint it. So I thought of painting water or something in connection with that. And I had called the snake thirsty.
Thirsty snakes, that's right.
I had this in my mind about that aspect of it. But when I saw it over there, I was immediately taken by the fact that she had added the movement of the snakes coming out.
They might have been thirsty for movement.
And snakes. And that rather than going to the fountain, they went to nature, these green, for their water.
Yes. The green connotates water.
To me.
Yes. And I think also to you, Toshi? Green.
I was going to actually put in more effects, except I don't have the time. But yes, I mean,
it's a gun.
And then I saw that the snake.
You will like it.
To me, the snakes had grown. They seemed larger, and I had left some added clay for her to work with. Did you add that clay to the snake, or are these the original snakes? Oh, because I had put some extra in them. But it seemed to me that the cracks are the way they are.
Now, this was the second time, so this has to be worked on yet one more time. So, Toshi, you get to give it to someone.
To Robert Mueller.
Robert, you have thirsty snakes that are moving to work with. Josh, you have one more, a third.
I hate to be a classroom teacher, but I'm working on the Virgin with the children, and here's a piece of sculpture, mobile. And
this is meant to hang, then?
This one is not going to hang.
Okay.
Balance itself that way. And everything could be removed so I can really go through a transformation that needs to.
Gustavo, I think you're going to work with this. I think it has called out to you, if you don't mind. So this will go to you. Say just a little bit about this, Toshi.
Okay.
creating an appreciation working on paper. And I was going to listen with the play, and I just sort of thought that we didn't have the time because it was not.
Open the front door.
Oh, look at that.
And open the other window. Over here, Jerry.
Is he a canary?
And just and we'll just sit quietly so he doesn't injure himself. Yeah. Open the back door, Robert. Oh, okay. And the kitchen windows? We'll just sit quietly and just let him be.
Which bird I have to work with?
Which bird? Isn't that interesting, synchronistically? We're looking at a bird, and a bird comes in. Oh, good. Good.
What does that mean?
You know, Salvador Dali once took an egg, and he painted it gold and painted glue on it and pasted dead flies on it, and then he put it into a box with some other work on it and wrapped the whole thing and sent it to the Museum of Modern Art with a description of what it was. And the Museum of Modern Art wrote back to him and said, Señor Dali, we're most grateful for this contribution, but what does it mean? And he wrote back, what does it mean? Indeed, what does it mean? Toshi, more words?
Not really.
Okay. It's a powerful piece and evokes nature very well. All right. So it's yours, Gustavo, with attendant questions and mystery. we have another form there on the table, do we not? Or is that just a bag? That's a bag? We have it. We have Mexico City.
This is a love story. One earthquake and that's what happens.
Any more sculpture?
No, I don't have a sculpture. I wanted to make a comment.
Yeah.
I've seen the white figure with that Chris and Dolores and Linda worked on. I didn't notice the base at first, but it was interesting to me when you were talking about the icon. Because as I looked at the white figure, I really liked it. It was really, it had some very pleasing quality to it. And then I realized that I was bringing to it, investing it with what it had been before and the changes that had gone with it. And then I was thinking now, somebody else who hadn't seen it the way it was before, who's just seeing it now, or hadn't. We have a really different attitude for it. So even I'm not expressing myself.
But it's very interesting what he's saying, because I want to bring something here. When Chris presented this figure, immediately came to my mind a place that is very common in Argentina, that is a very Catholic country. That is created near a church, especially in the outside of the, like in the rural places, not in the city actually, but in little small churches in the campo,
community, yeah.
And I don't remember the name of Exvoto, exactly. So in this place. I don't know the name in English. I don't know if there's an expression to it.
Just give it in Spanish.
It's near the church, people go with a representation of whatever they want to be healed or to happen. They do it with silver or gold or very precious material.
And offer it.
Offer that. They create like this structure that could have the shape, it's like put there near the church. So at a certain point, you see a very valuable
in a very irregular and also a kind of random structure that if you look carefully you could see parts of the body done by orthopedists, by
jewelers
or that are kidneys or feet or hearts or eyes.
Out in the open.
That are put in this place. This place is kind of like this, like
a receptacle. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
To receive the offering. Yeah.
So it's interesting because Ed is bringing that religious connotation on the object, and I had that wonderful image because it had like a resonance when I saw it with all the objects in when Dolores brought it, but it really was there white. Like without all the objects are in the front now.
Its receptivity is now underlined by the color and by the openness.
And the shape.
Yeah.
The openings and is the type of religious type of place. And people really believe that this virgin or this thing will heal them. And it actually happens. Very powerful.
Well, the object is not the word in French. It's not in ex voto.
Ex voto.
It's kind of the person is asking for something, and once it is conceded by the saint, then they have to bring this offer. It's a representation of what happened in the heart.
It confirms.
It confirms, yeah.
So. Yes.
I really agree with that. I couldn't express it before, but I was asking for something. I was asking for the person to have the key to show what it could do, and I was very pleased that the person knew what to do with it. And yet it could go back exactly to the way it was, and it would still work.
Very good. Any more sculptures?
Did you finish what you were saying? I thought you were on to something.
Yeah, I can't really express myself. It just, the whole thing of how we appreciate something, what we bring to it.
You remember how it was before? Is that what you're
talking about? Yeah, the way my experience of it now is based upon, you know, what it was before. And somebody who hadn't seen it before, it seems they would have a really different experience of it. And then I guess I call the question, well then what, how much of it is just seeing it? You know, when we look at anything, how much are we attributing, investing into it something that it was before or we've seen before or something? And how much of it is just what it is now, having never gone through any transformation or something like that. So it's just interesting in that consciousness would have that aspect that seeing something could have be a totally different experience having viewed it in previous permutations. That now that we're changed again, you know, then how would it be different? I mean, then when I look at it, I would have this incredible history of changes and so forth and evolution and so forth that are in it, that I would see in it, that somebody, how could somebody else would see it totally different? And then, so my perception of something, my experience of something, you know, could be just radically different from anybody else's, you know, graphically, from having undergone that process somehow. So it just brings up, you know, it's just real interesting.
Well, you can see, the phrase that Hesse used, that consciousness is a magic theater for madmen only. Because to perceive is a natural function, but to see consciously is a symbolic function, and memory is always operative. There's a mnemonic tone, always operative. And of course, if you're only conscious, then nature is invisible. If you're only conscious, then there is an unconscious, which is the whole natural horizon of the world. And you get astounded that it's still there and still working. So one has to be balanced. One must not sacrifice nature for your consciousness. That's egotistical. But one can weave consciousness and nature together. Then that's human. That's better. But notice the maturity. Like, Ed is realizing now, maybe for the first time, there are any number of ways in which one can see the same object.
But I think Ed is going, he's going to icons,
yes,
to us,
yes,
and when the separating that out from our own projections into the object,
yes,
and be able to discriminate between our projection,
yes,
and the radiance of the object is the highest art.
Yes, that's right. But look at what the case that becomes ethically interesting then. How do we see another person who is a kaleidoscopic object, to say the least? And the more conscious we become, the more problem we have to appreciate the other, not because of lack of promise, but because of so much proliferation of possibility. One tends to turn away from that complexity. One can become anti-social, as it were, out of complexity of possibility rather than paucity of means. So that to become fully human is also an ethical challenge, to keep on participating in life even though you know now how goddamn much trouble it is, to put it mildly. That is a hard thing to do. And that's why cooperation between mature human beings is a very difficult thing to achieve. A conscious society is a rare gem. A very rare gem. One of the first persons to deal with this consciously was Plato. And Plato has a statement somewhere, I forget what dialogue. He said a room full of Socrateses would be close to a chaos. Not a chaos, but very close to it. It would be a kaleidoscopic possibility which no one could limit, per se. We're not ready for the full impact of